In today's episode, I have a very informative conversation with, please excuse my pronunciation, Haroon Bojman. Haroon is a leadership coach, keynote speaker and lecturer, and has recently joined LH as a leadership specialist. Hailing from Holland, he is very well travelled and has a very inspiring take on what makes a great leader. He talks to me about how random acts of kindness and allowing others to just be can transform leadership. We also get to talk about paradigm shifts and the importance of staying curious. Haroon completed the LH Dynamics Talent Questionnaire, and his results as a creator encapsulate his very creative flair. There is a lot of very interesting content in this, so stick with it. I think you'll enjoy it. So welcome. I'm really going to struggle with saying your proper name, Haroon.
Very good.
Welcome to the podcast. And I think from now on, I'm just going to call you Jay, as you said, I'm allowed to do that.
Perfect. Because, very good.
Not being a Dutch native, I find that quite difficult. But anyway, welcome, very, very welcome to the call.
Thank you.
So you are a highly experienced and passionate leadership trainer, keynote speaker and lecturer. Mm-hmm. And you've recently joined the LH team as a consultant. Now, this, I believe, is because we speak the same language with regard to our passions and purpose for unlocking human potential. Exactly. But I want to know more about your journey. Did you know your purpose as a young man about to embark on your career?
Oh, that is really a very good one. And I often refer to the fact that it's more serendipity than actually my journey from early ages on. I will tell you something about it. I started my career actually as a football player. And that was my dream, to become a professional football player. But first of all, I wasn't talented enough, let's put it that way. But on the other hand, I was badly injured when I was 17. And I was also starting my military career at that time. And both came together. And actually, it was a very disappointing scenario because one of my doctors said after looking what actually took place that if I continued playing soccer and also sports, that I will end up in a wheelchair, which... was a very, very disappointing kind of part. But on the other hand, if I look back on it, then you can actually say, I really learned it the hard way, because you can always say, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And so if one door closes, another one will open up. So it also had a lot to do with resilience. During those days, I had to practice my knee and had to do a lot. And I had a nephew who was Japanese translator for the Okura Hotel Group, not only in Amsterdam, but mostly in Asia and in Japan. And he said, you know, you have to build muscle, and really muscle on your knee and on your legs. That is the only way which you can do. So join me and come to karate lessons. So I fought it the first time. Yeah. Why? But by doing it, I really had a talent for that. And it seemed that... that I was good at it and was practicing it and teaching it ever since. And teaching, on the other hand, is something totally different than actually practicing. But that is one big advantage what I actually gained, and I became very good at it. And I also started to work as a night porter during my studies and at those days. And that was the beginning of my hospitality career. So that's a very long kind of way, but the journey actually hit off actually by serendipity, yeah.
Amazing. It was a very interesting comment you just said there, that teaching is a very different skill or talent
exactly
to just practicing a sport or practicing something, because you can be incredibly good at something but not be able to translate that or give that to other people.
Yeah, yeah, totally right. And that most of the time has to do with the fact, and what I also learned during my hospitality career, right? Because I moved up the ladder and I thought, well, what do you want to become? That was what one of my teachers actually told me. And I said, I want to become general manager before I'm 35. Please don't ask me why, but during those days I did. And I actually climbed the ladder. And then I also noticed that it's not so much about what you can do, but about what others would like to do for you and with you. And that is much more important than only training and actually telling that you're the best or you have to do all of those kind of things. Most of the time, it's the other way around. How will you make sure that other people who you're delegating maybe tasks to can even do it much better than you would like to do it? And that all kind of training and educational kind of part, that was the next step after my hospitality career, because I really like to train, to coach, to advise, to help and advise people to become better. And that was actually the last part of what I do. And that is what I'm still doing at the moment.
And you mentioned talent there as well. I have a wonderful quote from you by Johann Wolfgang von Goethe. The person born with talent they are meant to use will find their greatest happiness in using it. I mean, that's something I really believe in. And you completed our LH Dynamics talent tool. And I know you use different tools like this, which helps people identify their unique talents. Yeah. So how important do you believe this is?
I think in essence, it's one of the most important drivers to everything you do, because if you can put talent next to passion, then you can reach incredible kind of things, which you most of the time don't think about in the beginning. And I often use the quote, if you always think what you always thought, you only get what you always got. So that change of mentality and change of thinking is much more important than people actually are anticipating. And that is what we most of the time do with paradigm shifts.
Yeah, there are many people listening that have no idea what a paradigm is. Please, can you explain what it is and how you can shift your paradigm by using reverse thinking?
Sure. What I will start with is that actually, if you think from anticipation point of view, you might have a talent, but talent doesn't always will continue. Because the step from talent to professional to expertise to all of those kind of parts are also related to the way how you anticipate the future. And most of the time, what I'm trying to do also with innovation sessions and future thinking sessions, it is you can and should shape your own future, because if you won't, somebody else surely will. And that relates to paradigms. And paradigms actually comes from the Japanese para dai mo. And that means that it's a set of rules and regulations, written or unwritten, that tell us two things. So number one, it establishes or defines boundaries when we are solving problems. And number two, it tells us how to behave inside of those boundaries in order to be successful. And that can be measured by your own ability to solve problems. In other words, to translate your talents into really solving problems in a different kind of way. And paradigms tells you that there's a game. What the game exactly is and how to play that game successfully. And then you can change that. And that is a paradigm shift. So a paradigm is very important, how not only how you see the world, but also how you can create a new kind of world in that. Also for yourself, but also for your company or for anything related to that. And then how do you shift then those paradigms? And that was your next question. That is to change the rules of the game to create a new paradigm. And most of the time, we are referring to out-of-the-box thinking. But if you think outside of the box, that means that you're already thinking in a new box. And that is a very important part, because that is changing to a new game, changing to a new set of rules. And if you do that, you actually have to search for trends, as they are often a visualization or form of paradigm shifts. So if you want to improve your ability to anticipate the future, you don't wait for the trends to develop. Instead, you have to watch for people who are messing with those kind of rules, who are changing the rules of the game, because that is the earliest sign of a significant change. And when the rules change, the world can change. And if you think of an example, for instance, SpaceX with reusable rockets. Now, the interesting fact is that NASA is a fantastic, talented, and experienced kind of institution, wasn't able to do that. And someone outside of the game who were changing those kind of rules, he actually tried it out with rapid experimentation, with less space waste, with decreasing costs. And now the interesting fact is that even NASA as an institution, a worldwide phenomenon, are actually insourcing people from SpaceX because they can do it better, cheaper, faster, more efficient. And that is what it actually comes back to. So that is, from my point of view, a paradigm shift in a total different kind of sense.
If we look into the future, what major social and economic shifts do you think will impact the way we lead, because there's so many different things that are going to affect leadership roles around the world, like AI or working from home, or particularly after the pandemic that we've had.
That's a very good one. So how can you use AI in your advantage? And that is what a lot of people are working with and working for. And I must say, I'm working together with a lot of professionals outside of the field, also outside of hospitality. And that brings total different kinds of possibilities in. So how you can use it also for leadership, but also for talent development, and to looking for how you can do things in a different kind of way, is build simulations with different kinds of AI tools. And there are so many possibilities. I think right now we only see the beginning of what will and what can take place with AI. And I know that there are also a lot of people who are thinking it might be very difficult, dangerous, whatever you think of it. But I think if you can control it, regulate it in a different kind of sense, then you can create a new kind of paradigm with AI, just like what is happening right now. Also with a lot of companies who are doing things in a different kind of way. If I might give the example for NEOM, for instance, in Saudi Arabia, in the Red Sea project. If you see what's taking place there, that's not only building a new kind of company, but it's totally innovating the whole country. And from so many different kinds of angles, also using AI, that is really a benchmark for what a lot of companies can do in this sense. And that is really an interesting kind of phenomenon. Of course, they have the big advantage that money is not an issue. They can do whatever they can. But by doing it is something totally different than being able to do it. And they're making it happen.
I think that a lot of people will be thinking AI, it's almost, we've moved on, haven't we, in the last 50 years, hugely. I mean, just if you think about mobile phones, if you think about everything that's happening in the world, in the last 50 years, it's gone a bit bonkers. And what looks like with AI, it looks even more bonkers. And that could be a little bit of a worry to lots of people. But you were saying there, if it's regulated properly, and that's the worry, isn't it? That it's not regulated properly, that it's not controlled. There are so many ideas out there and all these different shifts. How do we regulate it?
Yeah, I think that is a very good question, because you can regulate it on one hand, but if you see the amount of possibilities, and also if you compare and even mix different artificial intelligence tools together, I mean, it's endless possibilities. Now, on the other hand, from an innovation point of view, and that is more the field where I've been working the last 10 years, also for my own company, then you can see that there are so many possibilities, but you have to use it in a different kind of sense. So what you can do with it, and how I use it, is most of the time with reverse thinking. And reverse thinking is also known as reverse brainstorming, reverse engineering. And it's actually a valuable problem-solving technique that involves looking at a problem from different perspectives. And so instead of focusing on the problem itself, reverse thinking involves considering the opposite of the problem or the desired outcome. And especially the desired outcome is a very important one. And that is what you, if I refer it back now to hospitality, can always use. If you think about the intended customer experience at the end, then it's easier to make those kind of steps backwards instead of thinking linear forward. And that reverse thinking is important because it allows individuals and organizations to break out of their usual pattern of thinking and approach from a fresh perspective. We also call that fresh watching. So you look to the same problem, but with different eyes. And it can lead to much more creative and innovative solutions that might not have been considered using traditional problem-solving tools. Now, it seems difficult, but it isn't. If you take the analogy from waves on the water, on the ocean, I actually say everything comes in waves, because you can ride a wave, you can make use of the speed of the waves, you can control the waves, or, and this is taking place with a lot of companies, they're being hit by a wave. Or you can create ripple effects, which turn into waves. So that last part, that is a very important one, because those are the ones who are actually changing the game. They are, more the ones who are changing the paradigm. And those can be young persons, so fresh out of training, fresh out of education, or older persons, a lot of expertise in shifting fields and know what it is about, or it can be mavericks or tinkerers. And tinkerers are interesting because they are the ones who run into one of the paradigm problems and then try to do something with it. And then again, you get those kind of people who are doing things in a totally different kind of way. And people are thinking, yeah, but how does it come that no one else has thought of it? And that's exactly what it means. So those waves are always coming back. And that's an analogy from an old Japanese kind of strategy, Sun Tzu. And that's an interesting kind of part, because if you can't beat it, then work with it and do it together. So that whole kind of part is built into reverse thinking, and it can be very and particularly useful in situations where a problem is very complex or where there are multiple stakeholders. So by considering the opposite of the problem or the outcome, individuals and organizations can identify potential risks or unintended consequences that might not have been considered using those traditional problem-solving tools. So overall, I think, and I use it each and every day, reverse thinking is an important tool for problem solving and innovation. And it can help individuals, organizations in any kind of field think more creatively and approach problems in a more strategic and effective kind of way.
Well, it makes sense, doesn't it?
It does,
I'm a very practical person, and to me that makes sense. You know, if you're constantly looking at what's wrong,
exactly,
you can't see the wood for the trees. But if you look at for the outcome first and work backwards. And I love that ripple effect idea, because once you start it, something else I read is about the gentle approach. If you have that gentle approach to change, it avoids resistance and abandonment. So people don't give up.
Exactly.
If you're gently coming in with it and create that ripple.
Exactly.
Highly effective than coming in like a bull in a china shop yeah. and making differences.
So true.
Hi, it's Julia here. You may have heard me mention that at LH we believe we all work in service in one way or another. This is ultimately because as leaders, part of our role is to serve others. For people looking to build and sustain their level of service, develop their team and enhance retention, then I thought I'd let you know about LH's Train the Trainer course, as it might just be the solution for you. During this program, we'll show you how to design, develop, and deliver effective training sessions on any topic, which will also help you grow your confidence and techniques as a trainer. This course is interactive, practical, and a lot of fun, so please do join us. For more information, head over to www.luxuryhospitalitymgm.com and visit our leadership courses page. Now, we're heading back to the podcast. If we look at this podcast is about leadership purpose, and if we look at leadership styles, there are so many, and I've read all sorts of things when doing my research on you, but how would you describe yours?
That's a really good one. I will give you several ones, and some I only get acquainted the last 10 years, and that was in one of my last jobs before I joined in the education industry, let's put it that way. But when I was general manager, most of the time I used RAYOKs. And RAYOKs are random acts of kindness. Eh? And for me, they are really key to anything what you can do, because that's kindness and hospitality with a hospitality smile. And it has multiple physiological and physical advantages. It not only refers to an unexpected and spontaneous act of kindness for someone else without any specific reason or expectations or receiving something in return. And that is a very, very interesting kind of part, because that level of anticipation and interaction which is taking place, those are often small gestures or actions that aim to bring joy and comfort or assistance to others. And it also relieves kind of tension which can be in there. So if you can do something for someone else without any consequence or any kind of hidden agenda, as I most of the time call it. So they're just simple acts, but people can relive that. Most of the time, those are moments of truth, right? Because the thing what you do will always be remembered by those kind of random acts of kindness. And it is most of the time unexpected and not selfish by nature. Eh? It's aiming to make the world a better place, one small act at a time. And for me, that is also leadership. So let others shine. Don't be the one who always has to do those kind of things, but also give that kind of possibility also to others. It's more like servant leadership from my point of view. And I think That is what defines more how I will try to do it. Of course, you can always think of different kinds of parts. I have a very good example by Captain Abrashov, who's written a fantastic book about it. And we try to implement those kind of leadership tips into whatever is taking place. And it's called It's Your Ship. And it is an interesting kind of part because leading companies like Amazon and Apple and even Facebook, they are taking those kind of lessons from It's Your Ship and implement it into their leadership culture. And they quickly realized that an increase in moral performance and enthusiasm took place from that. So that might be an interesting one. And one is leading by example. So don't bark your orders. Don't tell others exactly what to do. But those who are leading by example create a stronger and more agreeable and productive team. And the second one is, for instance, listen aggressively. And he, as a captain, he conducted interviews when he boarded the ship for the first time with his 300 crew members. And he got personal in his discussions while learning about their personal lives, why they joined the Navy, and their thoughts on how to improve the ship. And he discovered that he had a crew of smart, talented, and very innovative men and women, but they weren't being heard by the previous captain. And he decided that it was his job now to listen aggressively to his crew. So when leaders listen and act upon suggestions, employees feel validated for making a difference. And you never know who will come up with the next big idea. And that's where the paradigm shift also comes in back. So extending an ear and responding accordingly can profoundly increase moral and productivity. Now, number three is communicating with a purpose. So not only communicating, but with a purpose. Because lack of productivity often results from a sense of disconnect between employees and the mission of the organization. And he took notice that the crew wasn't invested in the ship because no one had ever thought to give a compelling vision of their work, a good reason to believe it was very important. And he made them aware of their purpose. So their performance increased tenfold. Insane. Another one is go above and beyond. So you can think about in business as well as in the Navy, of course, standard operating procedures, SOP, as we call it, tends to take precedence. You will never get in trouble for following basic expectations and protocols because you know what needs to be done, right? But staying in line is very safe and effective, but it doesn't allow you to come up with new ideas. And following those standard operating procedures rarely result in exceptional outcomes. Innovation and progress occurs when employees feel comfortable and motivated to go above and beyond. So that is also a very important one, also related to what I'm doing for research at the moment. Then number five is the so-called the Washington Post test. And the end goal is very essential. But how you get there is just as critical. And he writes, if what I'm about to do appeared on the front page of the Washington Post tomorrow, would I be proud or would I be embarrassed? So all of those actions, those are very important, of course, eh? Because if I knew I would be embarrassed, I would not do it. And if I'd be proud, I knew I was generally on the right track. So leading with integrity is doing the right thing, even when it's very difficult. And the last one is taking risks. For greatness to occur, everyone in an organization must feel comfortable taking calculated risks. And as a leader, you have to ensure that your employees know the parameters in which they can operate. So let them know that thinking outside of the box will be rewarded. Here we go again. Even if it doesn't result in success, encouraging perfection snuffs out of your team's desire for risk-taking and creative thinking. In other words, killing innovation. Well, that's a very long answer, I know. But this is more how I try to build every kind of those tips into what leadership also can be.
Well, again, you know, me being that practical person, that makes complete sense to me because, you know, to be able to, it's one of the best forms of communication, isn't it? Communication is key. We are social beings. We all need connection. I mean, even the most introverted of people needs meaningful relationships. Yeah. Connection is what we need as humans.
Yeah.
I mean, the animal world, they connect brilliantly because they don't have the mind that our brain that gets in the way. But just things like encouraging people to speak up and be confident to speak up and know that they're going to be heard is hugely important, isn't it, within a leader?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is. And I think if people should do that more and listen more to what others have to say, then you can actually solve a lot more problems. And that is what I experience more and more in every kind of training or any kind of leadership course we I'm providing, even for students, but also for people in the field. And that becomes more and more important. And unfortunately, a lot of people have difficulty in listening to others. They can talk a lot themselves, but the listening part is, which is the most essential from my point of view, is often forgotten.
Well, so many, 3 seconds before people start formulating their response to what you're saying. So it's a real skill. Exactly. to actually stay present and listen fully before you can give your response.
Yeah.
So this, I'm really fascinated by the Rayot concept, because I think it's a wonderful concept. I mean, was there one particular act of kindness that you ever experienced that inspired this interest?
Yeah, I can give you one. And it was an interesting one, because Rayot, for me, doesn't stand on itself. I integrated it in the research I'm doing. I'm doing research about delight and wow. During my work, especially as a general manager, I was always intrigued to the fact that people told me, you have a fantastic product, and we loved your service. But still, more than 50% of all of those customers, they didn't return. So I thought there must be more to it, because if you like it that way, then why aren't you coming back, right? It's like going to a restaurant with fantastic meals and all of those kinds, but there is something which withholds you to actually come back a second time. And then I was intrigued to the fact that it was a research from a famous professor who was doing a lot of research about flow. Hungarian professor with a terrible name. I hope I pronounce it correctly for the Hungarians if someone is listening. But it's She Hestemihai. And he's done a lot of research about flow. But next to flow, he also looked at what makes people in any kind of company, employees or guests or even organization itself, makes people loyal. And loyalty doesn't come from the fact that you're satisfied. And what we do most of the time in hospitality, we measure the satisfaction level. But satisfaction is a skill, and loyalty is behavior. And that is an interesting kind of separation what takes place. Now, most of the time in hospitality, in any kind of form, even when there's a service provided, will be measured still in satisfaction, like net promoter scores or any of the others. But what you actually should measure is a so-called net loyalty score, which is very difficult. But that is the only part where people become loyal, and that is the fact when they are delighted. So my challenge already from, I think, 8 years ago was, how do I define moments of delight? And then especially the memorable moments, the moments with purpose, the moments with impact. After doing so many years of research in that sense, I thought I need to do something else with it. And then I saw that also those Rayots, they are forming moments of delight, because it's the same kind of emotion which will be evoked at that time. And it's about exceeding expectations, but in a different kind of form, not always the same, but doing things in a different kind of way. And most of the time it takes place where there's interaction. So I researched more than, I think, 1,500 different kinds of cases, also observed and did some triangularization of different research methods. And I came to the conclusion that there are now, I think, 10 to 15 different kinds of moments of delight in any kind of form. But most of the time, the ones who are really memorable are the random acts of kindness, which are doing things in a different kind of way without any kind of hidden agenda, but just because you want to do that. And the one I'm thinking of right now for myself was the time when I was doing research in New York, and my mobile phone actually wasn't useful anymore because I didn't bring the right plug to put it in the electricity over there. And it happened just on the street. So yeah, what can you do? You don't have a phone anymore and anything else. So I just asked a lady who was passing by, and especially in New York, can I maybe use your plug to put it in the socket over here? It was actually, at first, she was a bit like, I don't know what's taking place. But maybe she could see that I was really disappointed because I couldn't use my phone anymore, that she just gave it to me and said, of course, feel free. Here you are.
Nice.
And that was one of the nicest things. And to give you a total different kind of example, this is, for instance, at Citizen M. It's a budget hotel organization who is conquering the world, also using paradigm shifts, not only with their hotel, but also with their interaction which are taking place. And they are also builded in random acts of kindness. So to give you an example, at Schiphol Airport here in Amsterdam, that was the first Citizen M which opened up, and they have a so-called personal hugger. And the personal hugger is only reading the guests. And it might seem very contradictory to what hospitality is about, eh? Because most of the time you're not allowed to touch guests or give them a hand or whatever. No, out of SOPs. But they changed that whole kind of model, and they said, okay, what now? The most important is that we read our guests and that we can help them. So I tested it out also with a neuro device I'm using for my research, and we saw what took place. So Tata was, that's her name, and it's a small Indian lady, very approachable, very pleasant. And she was just reading a guest, so she doesn't do it with each and everyone. And then at a sudden moment, there was a customer coming into the hotel with a trolley, and he had a delayed flight. So he was very depressed, and he was not feeling happy, and you could see it on his face. And she could also see that. So she just approached him and said, "Welcome to the Citizen M. If you're ready for your personal hug, please let me know." And then she stepped away, which is already strange, of course. And the customer also didn't know what to think of it. He checked himself in with the self-check-in counter, went to his room. And we thought, okay, so that's that. But after 10 minutes, he came back, and then it suddenly became clear with him what the intention was. And he approached Tata and said, "Now I get it. Now I'm ready for my personal hug." And they hugged, and you have a customer for life. That's how it goes.
Oh, I love that. That's amazing. Being a hugger myself.
I can imagine.
I'm very much that blaze energy. We're talking about LH Dynamics and very people-oriented and hugging is. But I love what you were just saying there. She was reading. Now, this is one of the things that we do in our training is learn to read people and learn to understand what they want. So being customer or client-centric, understanding what they want rather than what you want to give.
Yeah.
I've got some friends that I met not a few years ago, great friends now, but they're very introverted. And I didn't understand. I just met them and thought they're really nice and went to give them a hug. And I saw that I entered into their personal space and they weren't comfortable with that.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I retreated. Yeah. And then every time I saw them from then, I just said, "Hi, how are you?" And tried to keep my arms folded. Way of going forward and throwing my arms around people.
Yeah.
But now they come and give me, I wait for them to approach me and they tap me on the arm or something because they're not huggers.
Fantastic.
But it's just being very sensitive and aware
it
of
is.
What others
yeah.
want,
it is.
Not what you want.
Exactly, exactly.
And the random act of kindness, that's two-way street, isn't it? Because if
it
you,
is.
I remember being on a tube a few years ago, and a lady was in the evening going up to London, and a lady got on and she looked absolutely gorgeous. She was obviously going to theatre or something, and I couldn't help it, but I just had to say, "You look really beautiful." And I saw her just as she got up to London Bridge and she stepped off the train, she was, her head and her shoulders dropped, her head held high. She sort of sprung along the platform.
Yeah.
She felt really good, obviously, but that made me feel good too.
Exactly.
That I'd helped her feel yeah. even better than she thought she felt.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, and it's also interesting to know because those random acts of kindness, they also have a physiological kind of effect. Eh? Not only you feel better, but also the hormones which will be created by doing those kind of things without any intention, they're tenfold. We call them the happy hormone. Eh?
Yeah.
And that is being created, so you get a much better feeling. You also, and this is, I thought at first, yeah, this is just a hoax, but it's really true because Harvard Business Review also researched those kind of physiological advantages, and it also seems that people live longer because they do that without any kind of intention. So all of those kind of parts, yeah, they're really also very good for you.
Yes. Yeah, is that what we call them, drugs. Good drugs. Good drugs. Good drugs. We call them drugs in LA.
Good drugs. Yeah, exactly.
I was reading an article about gratitude, and there's been lots of research done on gratitude, which is very similar in that people think, oh, you know, what's that? It's a load of gobbledygook, haven't you, actually writing down what you're grateful for? But it's been proven that because it lifts your energy, it gives you a boost of those, the good drugs, and makes you feel better. And all of those things can lead to better leadership, better self-leadership, better health, better wellness, better longer living, and being happier.
Yeah.
So
exactly. Very good. Exactly. So it's so important. Yeah.
Yeah. There's something that, something else that I really admire about you, and that is I love encouraging people to be curious. And you're a very naturally curious person. And you mentioned it, you've contributed to the research behind the business model shift.
Yeah.
And you've talked about all of your research and where you go, and you research a lot. Can you explain why you believe curiosity is so important in leadership?
Oh, that's it.
How long have you got?
Yeah. Okay, let's try to give it a short answer. No, the shortest answer is one way or the other. When we are a child, we're very curious to know all of those kind of things. We try to experiment, we try to test things out. And from, I think, 10 to 12 on, we unlearn in any kind of situation people to become not curious anymore. And because what we are offering is the so-called truth. So I most of the time see it as just a funneling kind of process, more a pipeline. So we're going to put everyone in, and we always get the same kind of end result. And for me, that was always a bit of a difficulty, because you know that people are not thinking alike. And why do all of them need to think in the same kind of way? I would always encourage the other kind of way. Be curious. Try to experiment. Use rapid prototyping. Try it out. If you haven't tried it out, then the only thing you can say is, okay, it's just a pity that we haven't tried it out, because you don't know. And what you don't know, you can't change. So for me, that's more like a reverse thinking process. And out of all of those kind of parts, you have to think in different kinds of order, especially if you want to make a change. And actually, what we would like to do is change situations which we don't like. So again, if you only keep thinking the way you always thought, you only get what you always got. So if you change that kind of thinking, you need to be curious about, okay, so what else can take place? And what can I control? You don't have to control things which you can't control, because some of the things are just like it is. But there are so many things you can change, either in your personal life, but also in your jobs, or in any kind of situation. What can change for the better? And also with changing kind of situations or kind of industries or startups, who can help to make the world a better place? And that is actually also one of the parts which we used in business model shift. So we looked with more than 45 different kinds of people, including some of my former students. And I said, okay, if you want to work together on this new book about business model shifts, then you're free to help with us, which they did. And which is not only an interesting kind of part, because you need to know how the writing part goes, but also to be curious about, okay, so what else is taking place? And we looked for more than 100 different kinds of companies all over the world, and looked what kind of shifts they actually were making. And those six shifts are interesting. Eh? So one is from products to services. So the move from a product-oriented business model to a service-oriented one. And that is becoming more and more. And you can think of any kind of Netflixization part, in subscriptions or in different kinds of parts. And the next one is from shareholder to stakeholder. And the move from shareholder orientation to creating value for all stakeholders in a greater ecosystem. That is also a very important one. Third one is from physical to digital. The move from fragmented online and offline businesses to an always on business model that is connected to customers and their needs and their pains, just like what we mentioned with data. And sometimes customers don't know what kind of needs they have, but then give them some. Fourth one is from pipeline to platform. So the move from a disintegrated ecosystem of businesses and uneven value change to directly connecting people and businesses, facilitating value exchange in an ordinary way. Then from incremental to exponential, and those exponential companies become more and more important. If you think about the big five in the world, they're all exponential business models, and they actually don't have competition. And then the last one is more from linear to circular. Very important right now, of course, the move from take, make, dispose to restorative, regenerative, and circular value creation. And so for each of those kind of shifts, that book provides key insights of it. And that was a very fantastic kind of journey with a lot of former students of mine, and also with a company I'm working for a lot. And they also do a lot in those kind of shifts. So that is interesting kind of. It's a game-changing business shift, let's put it that way.
So remaining curious. Have you ever experienced self-doubt?
Of course. Sometimes it's really a good thing. But by thinking about it, it's more like most of the time you aren't confident, but I'm confident in a confident outcome. Meaning that especially by training a lot and by experiencing a lot, you most of the time have a hunch of what works and what not. So with some sort of innovation trainings, we also do, I do some hackathons. And that means 48 hours on one business case, but then with a real life property. We do that in Canada each and every year. And then what I most of the time say is I know that it's a very difficult kind of challenge, but I'm confident with the outcome. I know that you can do it. And if you stand behind each and every one of the contestants and also the teams, then you can build confidence with them together. So you can say, okay, of course, we don't know what the outcome will be, but I know that we have some tools which can help you to define better what the actual situation is. We most of the time use a so-called double loop model. And the double loop model starts with, what is your point of view? So how do you see the world? Which direction do you want to go into? Also known as a North Star. And then if you understand better what the actual situation is in any kind of field, so in any kind of situation, only then you can go into the ideating phase. So the more the fresh watching, the looking for new ideas. And that is a lot of experimentation. We don't know if that can take place. If you have then the possibility to even create a prototype out of it and test it, well, then you have a double loop and you can go to the next. So then you can understand better what the whole context is about. And this is this kind of model I use most of the time in the trainings I'm providing and also with the people I'm working with. So if you understand also your customers better, then it's easier to find some new kind of possibilities for them and challenges than only thinking about what would be the best kind of solution. Most of the time you don't know. And probably you experience that itself. If you have to train, then it's not so important if the end goal is fantastic, but more what kind of journey all of your customers and your delegates are going through, right? So the learning path, which is most of the time often forgotten in any kind of field, is one of the most kind of steps which you can do, the so-called customer journey or employee journey.
Well, it's so true that no one shoe fits all. So a way we train is we read our clients, we read our delegates and go with the flow. You mentioned exactly. Flow, I'd like to just touch on that in a little bit.
Yeah.
About what's going to work and what the outcome is going to be the most positive for them.
Exactly.
But what I was hearing there is if you have, personally, if you have belief in your talents and skills, because if you marry your talents and your life skills together, because we all create life skills on our journey, then that's going to help with your confidence. It's going to help with your self-belief.
Exactly.
To be able to give the best you can and serve the best way we can, because we're all in service in one way or another, aren't we?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And if you can reach your guests better, and just like what you were mentioning, then you have to make use of that advantage. So the empathetical kind of feeling is so very important to each and every one of those steps. So you can't train everyone in the same kind of way. Sometimes you have to totally reverse that kind of part and also the route, but maybe even also the instruments you're using as such. And then even more importantly, if you want to create a team out of it. The Japanese have a very good expression for it. If I'm going to give a translation into team just in English, it's more together, each achieves more. But by doing that, it gives you already a feeling of what a team actually could stand for. So a team is not made out of individuals. No, you have to do it together. You have to perform that kind of task together in the best possible way, but also in the most pleasant kind of way. And because that is what you will remember as such. Yeah, I think that's so very important.
Yeah, I'd just like to go back to you mentioned flow, because that's something very much that we work with just not only everybody feeling that they're in flow, that they have whole team and the organization is in flow. How would you describe it?
Yeah, flow for me is actually, it's not only a certain kind of emotions which are taking place, but it's more a different kind of state what you can bring people in. And most of the time you see it at sports, with maybe even with football or with hockey or with any kind of part or with rugby. And you see that teams who are in a flow, they can do so much more. And it seems that nothing will influence that kind of feeling. So the better the feeling, the better the mood is, the more kind of positive emotions will be evoked by that kind of team. So they can also conquer a lot. Most of the time, it isn't even the best team who will win, but more the team who's in the best flow. And that is an interesting kind of thing what you can always use also for trainings, but probably also for crew on board. And I think that is really very important.
Yeah, we use it. We also call it that invisible thread that runs through the team or the organization.
Exactly.
That trust, everyone's trusting, everyone's doing their best.
I like that. Yeah.
So somebody once said to me, just always assume everyone's doing their best. And I just thought that's such a nice thing to think of.
Yeah.
Everyone is doing whatever they can in their world. And if you don't presume that people are just not doing anything.
I love that.
So, you've had a lot of experience, a lot of things going on, and you've moved to different countries. You speak six languages? And you're learning a seventh. I mean, how do you do that?
Wow.
And why?
I must admit, not fluently, eh? Not fluently. Now, but you have to know where we're coming from. The Netherlands is not only very small and very, how do I most of the time say it to people who don't know our country? I give them the example that I'm living more than 3.5 meters below sea level. So that means that 30% of our country would be vanished if we don't have any dikes or dunes or any kind of resistance against the water. But we really will have a problem within the next decade, I think, with the rising water level. So by nature, we have to do things already in a different kind of way. That also includes trading. And because we were such a small country, we had to conquer in the old days England and France and all of those kind of influences, Portuguese and Spanish. So trading was always in our blood. But by trading alone, you can't do those kind of things. You always also have to speak a language. So you have to make yourself understandable. And in our education, if you want to grow and if you want to move forward, you have to at least speak three languages. So not only Dutch, but also English, and then you can choose between French, German, and sometimes also Spanish, which I did. So I didn't took the very difficult route, but I took the route where you can choose a lot of languages as well. So that was already a starting point. Then for my next studies, I went abroad to the Dutch Antilles, to Curaçao, and that's just for the coastline of Venezuela, South America. And there they speak a different kind of language. It's called Papiamento. So Papiamento is one of those six languages. Papiamento is really strange because it's a mixture of Spanish, Dutch, and a bit of English, I think. I don't know exactly. But if you hear it, then you know what it is about. I will give you an example. No papia hopia by hasibo trabo. Okay. So that the only thing it means is, and this is what I learned because I was doing my placement over there, is stop worrying and continue with your work.
Well, I didn't hear any element of English in there. I didn't get that at all. So. I mean, we're so lazy. I'm not saying everyone, every English person is lazy with languages, but because majority of the world speaks English, I'm very envious of anyone that can speak languages. And now you're learning Japanese.
Yeah, but that has to do with the fact that already from early age on, I'm practicing karate.
Hmm.
And there you also have to learn how to count in Japanese, but also how to bow. what respect is about, what humbleness is about. And I integrated a lot of that Japanese lifestyle also in leadership, because there it is more about mutual respect, about synergy, about humbleness, about respectfulness, but also about different kinds of parts, which can be very interesting. And that is, I will give you some. One is the eye for detail, ma. Another one, something extremely outstanding, moments of delight. And this is the backbone of my research, subarashi desu ne. And if you've ever been in Japan, and if you know how they wrap their kind of presents, that's already an art in itself. So that's the something extremely outstanding part, but also kaizen, which we use most of the time in trainings, continuous improvement. But also the pokeyoke. Pokeyoke is preventing errors. And all of those kind of parts you can use one way or the other in everything you do with leadership. Because if it is about respectfulness, humbleness, honor, leadership, team performance, authenticity, and that, then you can say, okay, so it actually contains much more than only thinking about that part. So that is where the Japanese part comes from. And I just love the country. Let's put it that way.
Well, it must be difficult to learn, but fascinating.
It is.
We hear a lot on this podcast about the importance of failure.
Yeah.
Have you experienced failure? And how can, if we wanted to talk about that, how it can benefit any leaders that are listening, how does that benefit?
Do you have a minute?
Yes, of course.
Yeah. Mistakes and failures. I think we should encourage much more failures and much more mistakes, because that is the only way you learn the hard way, but so incredibly strong what you can learn out of it and what you can take out of it. I had a lot of mistakes. My first job as a general manager was a total disappointment. I didn't know anything about leadership. I just knew the theoretical kind of BS what people are teaching at education, but not what it really comes back to. So I couldn't read my customers. I couldn't read my team. I couldn't read my employees. I was just doing the things I was trained to do, but not trained from a very practical kind of way, but more from a theoretical kind of way. And that doesn't work. Also, the convincing part, the first kind of times I had to pitch, because I'm also a coach for World Startup. So I was training not only my startup, but also different startups, how you can pitch, how to convince others of your proposal and your value proposition is the best what you can have. And the first times that I was totally scared. I didn't know what to do. So there were so many kind of failures which were taking place. So those are some business failures. Yeah, what else can I say? Maybe failures from a more personal point of view, to really try to force my whole family to move to a different place because of my work. But the work was lousy. I hadn't done enough research about what it really is to work on an island, the social interaction which has taken place, and all of those kind of parts. So for me, it was a total failure. For my family, it wasn't, because they had a fantastic life on the island. But yeah, for me, it was over within a year. So those kind of failures for me were so very important to also can do the things I'm doing right now. You have to make deliberate choices. You don't have to stick to a certain kind of situation which you don't like. No, then just change it and use that kind of wave analogy to create ripple effects. And that is what I'm trying to do each and every time.
Yeah, I love that. We do all have choices,
yeah.
And not enough people take the leap of faith and make different choices, which is very, very empowering.
Exactly.
So your purpose has obviously evolved so much over time. From a young boy playing football to now, do you think your purpose will continue to evolve?
Yeah, I think so. It was, which it may be logical from one sense. In the beginning, it was much more about me, myself, and I. And it turns more into all of the others, my family, my daughters, my wife, having a fantastic quality kind of life. And of course, I'm always think of myself when there's good wind, because I'm a kite surfer. But that is a different kind of feel. But it also comes back to the waves again. If there are good waves, if there are good wind, then. But it's changing, and probably it will change within 5 to 10 years as well. And it's already changing by by joining LH, because the things you do are not only very interesting, but also making change. And I came to notice a lot of you, but also your colleagues. And that is a warm bath, I can tell you that.
Oh, that's lovely.
Really.
Really nice. Well, no, we're really, really happy to have you on board. And there's a few words here that I read that are all about you as well. And I can't wait for you to organize a boot camp for us, because just you're saying, I love this, never stop wondering, reflecting, learning, growing, and celebrating. I just think that's wonderful.
Exactly.
So we have one recurring last question that we ask all our guests. And that is, what one lesson have you learned that you would like to leave behind?
The best lesson is what I learned from, he was an advisor, but he was also the thing I'm doing now. He was a visiting professor, and I'm as well. I'm working at 7 universities at the moment in different kinds of places. And he always told me, do one thing for each and everyone you have interaction with as trainer or as leader or as motivator, and that is bring fun. If it brings a smile to your face, then you already got 50% of the emotions you try to evoke. The rest is all storytelling, and that is what for me is the most interesting kind of way. If I'm not having fun, people sense that each and every time. If I'm not confident, then they will never be as well. If they don't like it, I don't like it. So it's always some sort of a reciprocity kind of thing. And that is one of the things I would always encourage. Empathy, exceed expectations, and create moments of delight. Yeah.
But it goes down to feeling again, doesn't it? We're feeling energy-bound creatures, and feeling is the most important. If we feel right in any sense, we feel confident, that'll be better. If we feel good, it'll be better. Jeroen, thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining us. I've really enjoyed our chat, and I hope that's
you're so
listening.
Welcome, Julia.
Yeah, it's really, really enjoyable. Thank you very much, and look forward to seeing you soon.
See you soon, and thank you so much. It was a very, very interesting kind of talk together, Julia.